Mycem anisopliae is known to be one of the potential microbial agents for biological control against subterranean termites. Let me remind you quickly what is the life cycle of Mycorrhizium. First, the conidia is going to stick on the surface of the cuticle of the insect, germinate through, and produce some toxins called destructions that kill the insect. Then the fungus invade the entire body of the dead insect and produce a new generation of asexual spore conidia that eventually disperse in the environment. The interaction between Reticulotermes flavipes and Mycorrhizium anisopliae is known to be dose-dependent. We know that technically you need only one spore to kill the insect, but here we need about 1,000 conidia to reach the LD50. The reason for this is we know that there's defense mechanisms involved that prevent the termite to die from the fungus. This mechanism can be summarized in this table and can be regrouped into three groups. Behavioral processes like avoidance, grooming activity, and also the necrophagy are important factors that prevent the spread of the disease. Volatile chemicals in the nest can also be antifungal chemicals that inhibit the fungus growth in the nest. And finally, individual survival due to immunity of each individual termite. Today, I'm going to specifically talk about the insect immunity in termites and not talk about any of this other mechanism. What is the cellular encapsulation in insects? It's been described in Orthoptera, Coleoptera, and Leptioptera in the 80s and been kind of generalized to most of the insects. And the way it's been described is when the conidia stick on the surface of a cuticle and germinate through this cuticle and the epidermal cells layer. The epidermal cells have the ability to produce some factor that is going to call for help from cells that are called plasmocytes or granulocytes. At this point, we have what we call a granuloma that starts to encapsulate the infection point. At this point, we have two possible outcomes. First, encapsulation is a success, as we have a propionyl oxidase cascade that has been triggered, and we have a melanization of the entire complex that helps the insect surviving the infection. The second possibility is fungus goes through the cellular defense, can bypass this encapsulation, produce mycelium through, release a toxin, kill the insect. Therefore, the success of encapsulation depends on major factors. First, the virulence of a pathogen, then the host resistance. We know that there's some high specificity between pathogen and host, the physiological state of a host, and finally, the dose exposure. If the encapsulation is good, you may need multiple infections to kill the host. And we're going to focus this by the end of this talk. So our objective here is, surprisingly, there's not many studies that have been done about cellular encapsulation in termites. So today we're going to try to identify and characterize the cellular encapsulation in termites, specifically in Reticulotermes flavipes. Then we're going to compare the cellular immune response between two different species of termites. One is our model, Reticulotermes flavipes, part of a rhinotermitidae, a subterranean termite. The other one is a Termopsidae, a much more primitive termite from Southeast Asia and China, or the Termopsis choroidae. So, how did we do to visualize this cellular encapsulation? We use histological preparation by contaminating our termites, let it incubate for a given time, fix it, embed it into pyroplast, use a microtome to do some very thin section from 5 to 6 microns, and use multiple stain to be able to visualize different structure underneath the cuticle. So if we look at individuals that were not exposed to Mycorrhizium, these are our negative control. We can see a nice cuticle, a thin layer of epidermal cell underneath, no sign of encapsulation, no sign of infection. These are healthy specimens because it's negative control. On the opposite, if we look at specimens that were heavily exposed to the fungus and died quickly after the exposure, we can see that the fungus completely invaded the entire body of the insect. But this doesn't give us much information, about encapsulation because it's too late and everything has been completely overwhelmed. However, if you look at individuals that were exposed to the LD50, and specifically at the one that survived the exposure about 1,000 conidia per termite, we can find interesting structure like this. First of all, we can see exactly sometimes where the fungus has infected the cuticle with a germinating tube that you can see right here. And Most of the time you will see a sclerotized area right underneath the cuticle and a small amount of granulocyte aggregating around the detection point. This has been found a few times, but for more than 100 times we've seen something more like this, where the encapsulation has been a success, the fungus has been completely excluded from the encapsulation, and the melanized area is right underneath the cuticle and above the epidermal cells layer. Another situation here, again, the melanization area is right underneath the cuticle. Here, in this case, we have a small amount of granulocyte aggregating to help for the encapsulation, and everything is pretty much embedded in the epidermal cell layer. Which means, if we summarize the case, when the fungus tries to penetrate through the cuticle, it seems in reticulotermous flavipes that the epidermal cells layer have the ability to trigger the profanol oxidase cascade themselves and to produce the encapsulation. And in some cases, a small amount of plasmocytes or granulocytes are going to come and help for this encapsulation. Is this true for every termite? Well, we compared to 5 different species, but today I'm going to focus on one of the different species, which is a Thermopsidae, very primitive termite. And this is what we can see in this situation. You can see a very large area that has been completely melanized, a huge amount of granulocyte aggregating right around the area of infection. And this is usually from 300 to 500 micrometer large. And if you could focus at the infection point, you can still see the fungus embedded in the cuticle that is blocked, cannot go through this accumulation of melanized area. So this is a successful encapsulation. So what we can see in this Thermopsidae, or the Thermopsidae stoecidae, it's much more similar to what have been observed in Coleoptera and Lepidoptera, except that here we have a really massive amount of cells that are recruited around the infection point. And it's so big, in fact, that you can see here on the thorax, this huge area that has been completely melanized with tuberite, which is something you cannot see in reticulotermes. I haven't been able to really see clearly something because reticulotermes is way so small. And if you make the difference between the two types of encapsulation, this is what you can see in the Thermopsis. This is the size you can see in reticulotermes. Therefore, to successfully encapsulate the same type of infection, you need about 1,000 times more cells involved in the processes in Odontomopsis than reticulotermes. In conclusion, we know that reticulotermes evolved a very specific cellular response against soil pathogenic fungi. This human response has an extreme reduced physiological cost. It is easy, it is cheap, it is inexpensive for reticulotermes to produce this nice localized area because it never reached more than 30 microns. It's extremely small but very, very efficient. This explains partially why the dosage is so important, because this allows reticulotermes to survive multiple infections. And this is why we need such a high amount of conidia to hopefully overwhelm the system and have at least one conidia successfully bypass the cellular defense. So, in fact, it seems that the interaction between most of the behavioral processes that have been described by many authors and this very specific encapsulation, all this interaction may explain the absence of successful biological control using mycorrhizal manisopli against reticulotermes flavipes in a field situation. I'd like to thank Grant, the people from the Termite Lab in University of Florida, and I really want to thank Anna Robert from University of Burgundy in France for canceling his summer vacation last year to take time to teach me histology. So I really, really, really appreciate it. Thank you. I'm really glad for your questions.
I have 2 minutes for questions.
Yes.
So does it take a lot of your conidia to control the cross mortality in the more primitive termites than in
depends. I've been able to try on 7 different species from 5 different families. You have a lot of variability. In standard conditions, I found out that the drywood and dumpwood termite are very susceptible, while the subterranean termites are not susceptible. You need a lot amount of conidia to hope killing one individual. So it seems that certain termites are not susceptible compared to some of the termites. Yes?
Are there any treatments that can moderate the cellular immunity that would make termites more susceptible?
Well, for this you would have to depress the entire immune system. You can poison them, like has been done by Bucias in 1986. So it would be kind of double treatment with first treat with a pesticide to weaken the individual, and then use the fungus to eventually finish off the population. But it's this you would need two applications. So in terms of time consume and workforce, it would be easier to just use one treatment. So.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.